Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I am your host, Rob Oliver, and I appreciate you being with me today. I will say this show is coming out on American Thanksgiving. So for all of my listeners who are in other countries, I will just tell you that it's Thanksgiving and I'm thankful for you and for all of my listeners who are right here in the States and are celebrating Thanksgiving today. You should know that on my list of things to be thankful for is people that listen to the podcast. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being with me today. I have a sneaking suspicion that you are going to be thankful that you were here too, because my guest today is indeed a smart person. Her name is Leslie Hensel. She is a co-founder and partner with Riverbend Consulting, whose 50-plus employees solve critical problems and offer effective growth strategies for sellers on Amazon and other e-commerce platforms. She has personally helped hundreds of third-party sellers get their suspended Amazon accounts back up and running. She leverages two decades as a small business consultant and as an Amazon seller herself to solve the underlying business issues in online retail businesses. Leslie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I too am thankful for being here today.
Excellent. Hey, we're on a roll with this. Okay. So let's start here. Tell me a little bit about your backstory. Kind of how did you get into selling on Amazon? How did you get to be where you are today?
So I am one of the classic mom stories that you hear about people who started selling on Amazon for a family-related reason. I've been a business consultant for a very long time. And at one time, I had two little boys, one of whom was diagnosed with autism and has a bunch of other learning disabilities. And at the time, he was about 8 years old. And my husband and I were trying to figure out, what do we do? How do we really help him? So we decided we were going to homeschool him and really, really focus on therapy, as much therapy as we could cram into this kid. We were going to do it and solve the problems that we could and give him tools he needed. Well, I could not work the full-time consulting job with people calling me all day long that I had been doing and homeschool a kid and run him to and from therapy. So I had heard about selling on Amazon and thought, hey, this may be a solution for us because we had a lot of therapy bills to pay. So I started selling on Amazon, and nights and weekends, I would go find inventory. And then my whole family, we would ship our stuff together on the weekends. And we did this for 3 years while he was being homeschooled. It was fantastic for us. And then I just took it from there. Once I started doing it and I knew how, even when I didn't need to do it anymore and I could go back to my more traditional consulting work, I've been selling on Amazon ever since. It's been almost 11 years now.
Okay, so I love the story. I love the fact that, necessity is the mother of invention, right? So you saw a need and you fixed it and you saw it. So let me ask you this. You said that you're going out on nights and weekends and getting inventory. Mm-hmm. Are you going to other retail establishments, buying things that you are then reselling on Amazon? Is that the original model for what you were doing?
That was back in the Wild West days of Amazon, where you could get away with selling just about anything. So I was doing retail arbitrage and also going to book sales, library book sales, and buying so many books, carloads of books that we would resell on Amazon.
Okay. And how did that... I'm assuming it went well for you in the fact that you kept at it for a number of years and you have been fairly successful at it. So talk to me about those early days, kind of what you were doing and what you were learning.
Sure. So it's really important to know the numbers on Amazon. That was one of the first things that I really learned, is you had to know your numbers. You have to understand how much it's going to cost for you to ship something to Amazon and how much it's going to cost for them to fulfill the order. Because we all know that if it sells from Amazon FBA, fulfilled by Amazon, people want to buy that offer instead of buying something someone's shipping themselves, they just feel more comfortable buying it from Amazon FBA. So I really focused on the numbers every time I would go out to a retail store. And there are still plenty of people who do retail arbitrage and online arbitrage to this day. It's really important that when you go to the store and you're looking at the items, you look at the sales rank, you see how quickly it's selling, how many other sellers there are, and what the price is. And if I couldn't buy something that I could flip for three times at least on Amazon, the purchase price, I wasn't going to buy it, because you always make the money at the buy, not when you sell something.
Okay. That's a really interesting way to look at things. And so I will say, I had Matt Soliva on, who does retail arbitrage, has a booming business with that. I'm here in the Pittsburgh area. So folks, I'll put a link to his episode in there. But is that the business model of choice? Is that the business model that's recommended for Amazon? Or what other options are available?
So retail arbitrage and online arbitrage, it's really common that that's how people kind of get into it. They get their feet wet. Some even start out by taking books that are in their own house that are used books and selling those to make a little bit of money they can use to buy other inventory. But once you've really gotten into it, most people try and move into a different model that's a little safer, that doesn't have quite so many areas for complaints and failure and problems. Because when you buy things from retail stores, sometimes they've been returned. Your end customer may not be happy. So people move into a wholesale model where they buy directly from a wholesaler or a manufacturer. Then if you get really smart, you try and find a manufacturer who will sell exclusively to you. One of my favorite methods that people use, I've recommended this to so many people and it works. Whatever town you live in, there are these business parks in your town. They're everywhere. There are people in those business parks who are developing products, manufacturing products, and selling them, who would love to have an online presence, but they've never developed one themselves, and maybe they don't want to. So you can go to them and say, hey, I would love to be the person selling your goods on Amazon. Sell it to me for wholesale, or a little below wholesale, maybe. And I will create this beautiful online presence on Amazon. I'll create your listings. I'll do videos. I'll do ads. And you're going to have another sales channel. But I just happen to be the only person that you're selling goods to for me to flip on Amazon. So the wholesale model is fantastic. And then the ultimate goal for a lot of people is private label. They want to develop their very own product someday and get it out there on Amazon and sell it, where you're not competing on your own listing. You're just competing against others who sell similar items.
Okay. So it's kind of it's a building process that here's where you can start. Help me on this, because I was thinking like eBay is the place where you go if you kind of have one-off products. And so, my nephew, he goes out and shops at like TJ Maxx and Ross and those different places. And when he comes across like size 15 sneakers, he knows size 15 sneakers are hard for people to find. You go, you buy those and you can sell them on eBay. Can you sell one-off items like that as well on Amazon, where you literally have an inventory of one?
You absolutely can. So most items out there that have a UPC, if you put the UPC in on Amazon, you're going to see there's already a listing for that item, and you can sell just your quantity of one. I'm laughing at the 15 sneakers because one of my kids wears a 15 wide. And in fact, we had to order his shoes online, and they came today in this massive box that I laughed at because it was the biggest shoe box I've ever seen. But see, that's the exact kind of product that is so perfect for Amazon. It's things that it's not easy to go find at Target or at Walmart. If someone's looking for a special glitter pin instead of a regular pin, or they're looking for an oversized shoe or a certain kind of makeup, there's so many items that retail stores, they can't stock every preference you've ever wanted, but you can stock it on Amazon.
Got it. Okay. So when you're starting out the business, I'm sure that there was a learning curve that went with that. And if there's folks that are listening today and are like, I think I would like to do this, talk to me about like, how do you set this thing up from the beginning to for success so that the learning curve is not quite as steep. Do you have suggestions there?
Absolutely. The first thing you have to do is treat it like a real business. Most people who start out selling on Amazon, they start as a side gig to see if it's going to work. That's one of the great flexible things about it is you can start it up on a shoestring budget, on the side, on the weekend, and see if you can make money. But that doesn't mean that you should act like it's a hobby. You need to have an LLC, which is not that expensive to set up, and you do need to get insurance so that if there is some kind of a product liability claim based on something that you've sold, that someone's not going to be able to sue you and take your house. Okay. So, and then in some jurisdictions, you have to have a business license as well. So just make sure you do things the right way. Amazon is starting to require and ask for a certificate showing that you have insurance once you get over a certain amount of sales.
Okay. So I'm a speaker. I do a lot of public speaking, and I'm able to get a rider on my homeowner's insurance. And maybe I'm getting too technical with that, but making sure that you have the right insurance to get yourself covered, having an LLC so that you are not personally liable, all of those things. Fantastic. You mentioned kind of Amazon having some rules and regulations in place. Can you kind of give us some insight into the things that Amazon is looking for with their regulations? I'm assuming that it's not just a thing to make it more selective as to who sells on Amazon. It's making it so that everybody knows, everybody's operating under the same guidelines. Is that right?
Very much so, because I think a lot of people who try out Amazon, first, they probably tried out eBay. eBay is kind of like your starter pack. And you go in there and you can create any listing you want and it belongs to you. So you take your own pictures, you create your own title and listing. It's all yours. It's Rob's product. But on Amazon wants uniformity. They do not want every seller being their own special star on Amazon. So you really have to follow the rules, such as you don't create a new listing until you've searched to see if that product is already on Amazon. You search by the UPC and see, is it already there? You search by the title. If so, you just become one of many sellers on that particular listing that already has photos, that already has all of the text. You also need to understand Amazon's condition guidelines. You can sell used items on Amazon, but it's not like eBay where you're really describing it all yourself. Amazon says very specifically what does and does not qualify as new. Like, it has to have the original packaging. It has to have the original warranty. If there's anything that would void that warranty, it's no longer new. So there are a lot of rules out there. Amazon does have something called Seller University on its website. That's a lot of videos that you can watch. And most of the rules are there and pretty easily searchable. And if you take Seller University, it points you to a lot of those very basic rules pages about things like condition or like how to package your items and the expectations for that.
Okay. And I don't know why you would know the answer to this off the top of your head, but I'll ask anyway. When you mentioned writing your own descriptions for this, my wife had some clothing that was new. It had tags, like it was, and she's like, let's see what we can do with this on Amazon. And so, or on eBay. And I went on eBay and I had to write descriptions for it. And I went I spent probably 12 hours doing all of this. And then I put 15 items up there or something. And then I sold like three of them. Two of them I sold and I sold them for like what I originally listed them for. And one of them I sold and made some money on. And then eBay ate all of my profits through different fees and everything. How do the fees on Amazon compare to the fees on eBay or other e-commerce sites?
There are two kinds of fees on Amazon. There are the fees that you pay whether you use FBA or not, and then there are FBA fees. So just real quickly, FBA is fulfilled by Amazon, and what that means is I, as a seller, ship my items to an Amazon warehouse, and then Amazon, when the item sells, they repackage it and, or they put it in the right box or envelope and they ship it out to the buyer. So Fulfilled by Amazon has its own set of fees. If you look at just the referral fee, the fee that you get for selling the item, the eBay and Amazon fees are relatively comparable. They're really not that far off. And it varies by category on Amazon, but it's generally 15%. And that is what they take just for selling the item. So even if you ship it yourself, that's what you pay. The FBA fees are where you really have to look carefully. There are fee calculators that you can look at on Amazon. You can put in the ASIN, which is the identification number Amazon uses, or the UPC, and it will tell you exactly what the fees are for FBA for that item. Because if you don't understand them, you can really get in trouble. I like to estimate the fees high to be safe. So let's say I'm selling an item that I bought for $10. I need to be able to sell that for $30 because I'm assuming $10 is what my cost of goods was. $10 is all the fees associated with Amazon, including inbound shipping to them. And then $10 is my profit and overhead.
Okay. So what I'm hearing you say is you have to, in order to double your money, double your money, you've got to triple your money.
Triple it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Most of the time, unless you're selling very expensive items. When you get up over $50, $60, you've got a little more wiggle room, right? Okay. Because even though that referral fee goes up, the percentage, the pick and pack is about the same unless the item is much bigger. So at FBA, you're paying pick and pack fees, you're paying storage fees, things along those lines that are more based on the weight and size of the item than the value of the item.
Okay, so let me just make sure that some of those are flat fees and not percentage fees. Is that
correct?
Is that correct?
Okay. Yes, like the pick and pack fee, which means a robot or a human went and found the item and put it in a box and put the label on the box. That pick and pack fee is not based on the value. It's a flat rate.
Okay, got it. I'm just trying to make sure that I understand all of the nuances.
Oh, yes. I know I'm throwing so much information. Sorry.
No. It's the more information, the better. I'm just trying to make sure that I'm digesting what you are serving. So I want to go back to something that you said earlier. You said that the money is made at the buy.
Yes.
Okay. Can you talk to me about that concept and then talk to me how that plays out in real life when you are doing your buying?
If you spend too much on an item that you're buying from, let's say you're buying from a wholesaler, if you overpay for that, you are never going to be able to mark it up enough on Amazon, eBay, or anywhere else to actually make a profit. You have to really look at the competitive marketplace, how many other sellers are out there, and also look at if you can figure out how much inventory they have and look at the sales rank. Sales rank on Amazon is super important. If something has a sales rank under 1,000 in a category, it's moving all day, selling all day long. You're going to see orders pop up, ding, 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 one after the other. If something's sales rank is 1,000,000, oh my goodness, you could be holding on to that thing for 3 years. So you really, and it doesn't matter, it's not the price either. The price elasticity, you could put the price way down, it's still going to sit there if it's 1,000,000, just no one's interested. So you have to be so careful that you do not overpay and you do not buy items that don't move. Because once you've spent that money, it's your sunk cost and there's nothing you can do. And the buyer on Amazon or eBay, they don't care what you paid for it. They could care less. They're not there to rescue you because you overpaid for an item. And then you end up having to do a fire sale to just try and get your cost of goods back or part of your cost of goods back. So you always have to remember that you are never really making the money when people buy the item. You're making the money when you make a good deal, when you make a good buy, good terms with your suppliers.
Okay. And you're talking about looking at sales rank and looking at things like that. Talk to me, are there tools that you're using? Are you just looking at eBay Amazon listings? Like what are the tools of the trade and how difficult are they to access?
So there's both options. One is that you can just look at the Amazon app or look at the Amazon website, or there's an Amazon seller app that you can put on your phone and it will tell you straight up, like almost anything you buy on Amazon, if you scroll down under the details, it'll tell you this is ranked number 34 in clothing, whatever the rank might be. Then there are tools out there like Helium 10 and Jungle Scout, lots of software. Smart Scout is another one that are relatively inexpensive. They're on a monthly subscription plan, and sellers can use those to see the velocity at which an item sells. So you can see, does it sell 10 a month or 100 a month? You can see with a historical pricing, that's huge. Has the price always been here? Did it used to sell for $5 cheaper or $100 more? And you can see how many other sellers have been selling the item. Like usually, are there 20 competitors on this listing or just one? Because if it's something with one competitor, buy that inventory up as fast as you can, right? So there's a whole lot of great data out there. All of the tools that I mentioned, they have a free trial. They usually have a 30-day free trial. And you can play with all of them and see which one kind of speaks to you and that you understand the data.
Okay, it sounds to me like you're swimming in a sea of numbers every day. Am I way off base on that?
It's so true. And I tell you, the Amazon sellers that do not succeed are the ones who don't know their numbers. To me, that is the most frightening thing that you can do as an Amazon seller, is to not adequately track your numbers, how much you spend on inventory, understanding your overhead, your mileage. If you're out there picking up inventory, when you're taking your stuff to UPS to ship it to Amazon, how much did you spend on boxes and tape? It all adds up, but you can spend $1,000 at Uline on boxes and tape. So if you're not really tracking every single expense and know month to month, close your books month to month and understand whether you're making a profit. I've known sellers that didn't close their books till the end of the year, and they worked all year and made nothing.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, what you're saying makes so much sense in that if you're not tracking things carefully, it can run away from you very quickly. And then eventually you find out like, I did a lot of work and I don't have very much to show for it. Okay. So talk to me, what's your experience, between doing FBA and doing self-fulfillment? And I asked that question from this perspective. I'm an author. I self-published my book. It's not print on demand. I have, you know, several hundred copies of my book sitting here at my house. It's listed on Amazon. And when someone buys it, the order comes into me. And the nice thing for me is that I'm getting the maximum amount of profit possible per book sold. And you know, it doesn't bother me with fulfillment and everything. Talk to me about what are the advantages of self-fulfillment and what are the advantages of FBA or fulfillment by Amazon?
That's an excellent question. So first, let's talk about categories. There are some items that Amazon either will not ship for you, or they will charge usurious prices to store and ship, such as fragrances. So are you allowed under post office rules to ship a fragrance? Yes, you are, in small quantities. Now, you can't ship a pallet of them, but you can ship one bottle. But Amazon requires you to have hazmat approval and pay very high rates. And you pay super high rates to even get your stuff to Amazon. Like a box that would usually cost you $10 or $20 to send will cost $120 to send because of hazmat. So with hazmat, shipping it yourself is always a better gig. Then the other decision factor is really how much you want to scale as a seller. If this is a side gig and you can't actually ship every day because you've got a real job, send it to FBA. Because if your orders are late, you're going to get suspended from Amazon. You're going to be in trouble. You don't want that. If you do have time to ship every day, that's super fantastic. Do it when you can. But if you really want to scale, how many items can you really ship realistically? Right? So if you can only ship 10 a day, you're going to reach a point where you just can't do that anymore unless it's seasonal.
Got it. I think what you're talking about makes a whole lot of sense from this perspective, that you've got to figure out what your own time is worth. And mm-hmm. So how many hours a day are you going to spend doing the shipping? And then Because you're not getting paid for that, you know.
Right. You're just avoiding expense.
Right. And so in that way, is it cheaper for you to have somebody else do this so that it's not costing you time and money and your own personal time and aggravation? And what is your own sanity worth? Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you that I do both. I have most of my inventory at FBA, but there are times, especially at Christmas, I have two very able-bodied young men in my house who are called children, who will ship for me. And it's been like their Christmas money before, that they'll ship in December. And they'll ship things. I do sell some fragrances and other items that are hazmat, but I'll also just have them ship whatever I've got in there that didn't make it to FBA. And for a month, it's awesome. They just ship and ship and ship every single day, and it makes money. The rest of the year, we don't want to mess with it. It's one or two orders a day. It's not worth it. We just let Amazon handle the bulk of the orders. Everyone has their own equation for this of when it makes sense. And, you know, the great thing about FBA is it can become almost like, it's like semi-passive income.
Got it.
Because you can ship a bunch of stuff over 2-3 months, and then you just step away and you're not really doing anything.
Right. All right. So real quick, just as kind of way to wrap this up, if somebody's thinking to themselves, I'd really like to do this and I want to get started, do you have a suggestion to say this is a category where you can get started with a fairly low entry fee and, you know, some relatively easy things? Can you talk about that just quickly?
Absolutely. Toys and games is a really great place to start. It's relatively easy to find inventory, both wholesale and if you do retail arbitrage. Stay away from Disney brands and other brands that might come after you for intellectual property. But in general, toys and games is really great. Also, the cost of inventory isn't super high, so bad things aren't going to happen to you. Then I would go into home and kitchen. Lots in home and kitchen, small appliances, small items, think, you know, lemon squeezers and knives, knife sets and other things that people are buying all the time, cutting boards. All of those are good, low cost of entry. And there's a lot of really nice products out there you can get wholesale and put on Amazon.
Fantastic. Hey, Leslie, you have been fantastic. If people want to learn more about you, they want to learn more about Riverbend Consulting, what's the best way to do that?
So you can visit our website at riverbendconsulting.com. The most exciting thing about the website is at the top, you'll see a phone number. If you have a problem with Amazon and you need help, we actually answer our phone like every day. It's amazing. I just laugh about that because not many service companies answer their phone anymore. We're also on all the major social media. And if you'd like to follow Amazon news, jump onto LinkedIn and connect with me because I post about Amazon 5 days a week.
Excellent. I will put all those links down into the show notes so that people can find you, they can connect with you, and if they need to, they can call you, which, what a novel concept. Leslie Hensel, thank you so much for being here. It is now time for 3 questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for this, my friend?
I'm ready.
Okay. In keeping with the Thanksgiving theme, what would you say is one thing that you are extremely thankful for?
I am most thankful for my healthy children. Both of them have not always been healthy. And so I am super, super grateful that they are healthy. And I would like to remind everyone out there to be grateful for their healthy children every day.
Well said. Where is the best place to eat Thanksgiving dinner? Does it have to be, is it at your house? Is it at your parents' house, grandparents? Like what place is it that when you think Thanksgiving dinner, that's where the memory goes?
Hands down, it's at my house because my older son wants to be a chef.
Oh, so does he have like a special Thanksgiving thing that he makes?
He learned how to do the Alton Brown turkey and gravy. It's amazing. And he makes multiple pies, and it's just heaven on earth.
Okay. So last question for you, and that is, what is your favorite Thanksgiving side dish? Okay, so, I mean, we got turkey is your main dish, and then of all of the other accompanying dishes, what is the Leslie side of choice?
My mother makes old-fashioned cornbread dressing. It is freaking amazing. That and my kid's buttermilk pie. Okay. To die for.
Tell me about buttermilk pie. This is a concept I'm not familiar with.
So buttermilk pie is like a poor food from the South from the 1800s when people just didn't have very much. And it's just sugar and eggs and buttermilk and vanilla and nutmeg. And it comes out kind of like a chess pie, that texture of a chess pie.
Okay.
But it is tangy and sweet and just out of this world.
Okay. So my mom's family is from down in Richmond, Virginia. So I have Southern roots and heritage. And I'm just going to tell you, my wife doesn't have an appreciation for buttermilk the way that I do. From this perspective, she never actually has buttermilk in the house. And if you need it, she does her quick and dirty method of adding vinegar to regular milk, which is, there's an element of that, like, hey, it works. But something tells me, like, buttermilk is a staple of Southern cooking for a good reason, and you should actually use the real stuff. Just my personal preference. Listen, Leslie, thank you so much for being with me today. You are indeed a smart person. I am thankful for you. I am thankful for my listeners. And I will remind all of you that are listening that if you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.